The task of feeding a hungry planet, despite the fact that it's a universal concern, has become a polarizing issue, with industrial agriculture on one side and small organic farmers on the other. There's an urgent need to resolve their differences, as the recent spate of natural disasters has reminded us. Advocates of scientific agriculture argue that it's necessary to keep up with the sheer scale of human needs. Opponents question its safety. The arguments pro and con are familiar to Dr. John Purcell, Vice President of Global Research and Development at Monsanto, and we're asking him to share his perspective. Good morning, John. Thanks for coming in.
Chris, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
What's the case for applying science to large-scale agriculture?
Well, I'd argue there's a case for applying science to all-scale agriculture. I mean, I think
good point.
One of the things we
hard
do
hard to separate from agriculture.
Well, it is. And as a seed company, I mean, I've got customers with thousands of acres in California or Brazil or Europe, and I've got customers right here in Hawaii with 10 acres, 100% organic. Mm-hmm. And I think science for me, as a scientist, of course, it's about really about delivering innovations in the marketplace. It's really about allowing our customers and our farmers to be successful, because they're doing a job that's obviously so critical: increasing populations, you know, higher input costs, reduction in land. We've got to have innovation in order to drive that, whether you be a small grower, organic grower, or whether you be a large-scale conventional grower, or anything in between.
John, as soon as I say the word Monsanto, there's a reaction in a place like Hawaii in particular. Mm-hmm. To what do you attribute that?
I think it's pretty complex, and I had the pleasure, Chris, of living here for a few years, and you know, just amazing, wonderful, wonderful people. I think it goes pretty deep. I also had the pleasure of heading up Monsanto's research operations in Europe, mm-hmm. and again, some deep-seated feelings about Monsanto. And I think first thing is we got to recognize the real. We got to recognize that we have an obligation to address it. I think for a lot of years, we spent time talking with our customers, which are growers and farmers, talking to the food chain, talking to people that are in agriculture. But we missed the 98%, 98-point-plus whatever percent of people who aren't in agriculture but are talking about food and have concerns about safety, have concerns about where their food comes from, have ideas about a better way of growing things. And frankly, it wasn't until 3 or 4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, we said, look, this is ridiculous. Everybody's talking about us. We need to be in the conversation.
Yeah.
And I think it's been really positive. I do a lot of events. Some of them, frankly, aren't that friendly, but you score points just for showing up, right? And just
sure.
to say, look, let us talk to you about what we do as a company. Let us talk to you about agriculture. And I think for us in Hawaii, a big part of it was just pulling back the curtains and saying, here's what happens on our farm. You know, having open houses, having tours, going out into community, giving talks at, you know, local clubs at, you know, different citizen clubs, et cetera. And it's really opened up a lot of conversations for us that have been really, really important. Because what I think you find is once you get in a conversation, we had an event last night, a network event at the site on Kania, 100-plus people there. You find their shared values. You know, when we talk about how we think about using drip irrigation to save water, or how we think about some of our soil conservation programs, how we think about controlling pests using modern tools, really tools that have a long basis in science, like integrated pest management. You find values that you share with people, and they may not know a lot about Monsanto, or they may have certain ideas about Monsanto. But then when you're talking about soil and water and better ways to control pests, you find, oh my gosh, we have something in common. And we actually opened up a STEM education center last night. We had a number of educators there that we're going to make available to schools on Hawaii who doesn't share a value around education. And
yeah.
So that's been the good part about it, is, you know, we recognize we had to do a better job. We had to address the concerns in the community. And a big part of it is just pulling back the curtains, inviting people in, and find places where you can share some values, whether it be education, whether it be sustainability, whether it be butterflies. You work with the Wahoo Butterfly Club,
yeah.
because we have a program there for monarch butterflies on our farm. Once you find a point of shared values, then you can have a real conversation about food and about agriculture, and then you get over kind of some of the noise that's out there, and it allows you to have what I call a real conversation about food and agriculture.
Well, the conversation has to center on the future, and there's a lot of hungry people out there.
Yeah.
And as how much trouble, if the world goes on the way it is now, how much trouble are we in?
Yeah, and I think one of the things that's scary, and as all of us in agriculture, we take the global situation very, very seriously. You know, when you live in the U.S., you live in Western Europe, we're in a pretty fortunate situation. Not everyone, but, you know, people are generally fed. We have a lot of choices in our grocery stores. We're able to afford a lot of things we want. Now, we have certainly people that need help as far as meeting their basic needs. But on a global scale, there's still over 800 million people that the U.N. Designates as undernourished or you know,
starving.
That don't have enough food. That's an outrageous high number. The good news is over the last 30 years, actually the number of people have gone down. Although last year, and this is scary, first time in 10 years, the number ticked up. You know, and that's not a good proposition. But because of raised awareness, some of it's distribution, but frankly, some of it's technology. It's really about innovation providing higher yields with reduced inputs. It's allowing us to grow more with less. And so we've been making progress to it, but still that 800 plus million people in this or on this world that are not getting the calories they need. And even in the U.S., there's lots of communities where people are making a choice. Do I pay an electric bill or do I get some food, right? I mean, this is basic kind of stuff that we've got to be. And sometimes we get in this bubble around what we want food to be, but we got to recognize there's a basic need here for calories and for production agriculture to provide food for a lot of people on this earth. And 2 billion more coming, Chris, which is the other pressure point, right?
So, John, a problem of that scale usually requires a change in consciousness, a real tectonic shift in how things are done, because I suspect the way we're producing food now is not adequate to feed the number of people that we're going to have on the planet.
Yeah, and some estimates are
fair to say.
We're going to need actually, because not just the amount of food that needs to be produced, but because the types of food. You know, as economies evolve, as economies mature, the types of food they ingest actually change. So some estimates say by 2050 we're going to need 50% more food, and we're not getting more land. We're not getting more farmers. So it really cries for we're going to need some pretty broad-scale innovations to continue to keep up. As I say, we've made progress over the last 20, 30 years. And as you mentioned in your opening comments, I've been on farms in over 35 countries now. And I tell you, the dedication is there at the farmer level, but they've got to have the tools. They've got to have the innovation. They've got to have the ability to take advantage of technologies. And it's going to require not just where we're in, which is the seed business and the agricultural input business, but it's going to require the whole chain to look at this, because some of it is better storage of food. You know, in the developing world, a lot of stuff rots on the vine. They can't, because there's not enough storage capacity, or the distribution channels are so bad. Transportation in some of these countries. So
is that sort of an under-recognized issue?
I think, yeah, and I think, yeah, of course, the dichotomy is, right, we got obesity rising in many parts of the world, and then in other parts of the world, we've got more people starving. So you've got this dichotomy. Distribution is a part of it. Part of it is storage, part of it. But, you know, I think one of the things we try to do is think about in our business, what can we do? Well, what if we had, as we've launched in India, a tomato that stores better or a tomato that can be shipped better? That has huge value, because now you're not trying to get it to market in 2 days. You have 3 or 4 or 5 days. And the infrastructure can support that. And I think it's those kinds of things that seem small as far as innovation goes, but can have a huge impact. And it's going to require all parts of the chain, all the way from the grower, all the way out to the final selling point to the consumer, to think about their processes, think about what innovations they can bring, and then let's address it to both in the developing world and the developed world.
Well, I know innovations are hard to predict. That's why they call them innovations, right? But at the same time, you began to allude to that. I'm just wondering, in what areas are the most productive areas where innovation can make a difference? You mentioned distribution.
Yeah. And I think part of it is what's really cool, Chris. And this is, I mean, I'm a half glass full person. In agriculture and science, you better be optimistic, because you're going to face a lot of things out there, right? But a lot of hurdles. But I think what's cool about it, over the last 20, 30 years, I'd call it the age of biology. I mean, you can think about it in the human, on a human health perspective, how much genomics has really changed the world. Well, in agriculture, it's the same way. It's the understanding at a basic level. And it's not just GMOs. That's one tool. But it's really about better understanding at the genetic level. Why do plants perform a certain way? How do they produce their fruit? What are the genetics of that we can modify? Or or that we can understand so that we can drive new innovations. In some cases, it's modification. In other cases, it's just doing better selections, better breeding, because we understand the genetics very well. And in vegetables, that's where predominantly the products come from, is that advanced breeding. But it's been sort of the golden age of biology because of the investments in genomics, genetics, really understanding at more of a molecular level why plants perform the way they do. What's coming now, what's really exciting, is what we've seen over the last 3, 4, 5, 6 years is an infusion of digital and robotics and all of these new confluence of technologies that will have tremendous impact. You know, I always laugh at people. I say, ain't your granddad's farm anymore, ain't your granddad's tractor anymore. When you're plugging a tablet in with a script that tells the tractor when to plant, where to plant, how to plant, when it's monitoring the soil, monitoring the moisture contents, monitoring weather climatic conditions, and then taking all that data to allow the farmer to make better decisions about when they plant, how they manage their crop, when they harvest. That's a whole new age. And then on the, you know, on the side of the after harvest, you know, all the tools that are happening there for even as you harvest, how do you use new robotics, automation, mechanization? So it's really cool. You know, it used to be you'd show up at these meetings, there'd be a lot of agricultural people at these, but now you've got startups, you've got venture capitalists, you've got all these new technologies flowing in here trying to address the most basic challenge of all, which is how do we produce enough food to feed the world. And it's really cool to see. And the other thing is it's attracting a whole new crowd. I mean, I'll be 60 next year. I'm not going to be around forever, right? But it's like you're attracting a whole new generation of people who are really have this as a real passion for them. And they're coming in from IT, from mathematics, from robotics, all these cool things, and now applying it to how we produce our food. And that's a really cool age to be a part of agriculture.
Let's hope that coming together trend continues. That'd be probably a lot of people would benefit, John.
Absolutely.
Thanks very much for coming in.
I appreciate it.
Dr. John Purcell is the Vice President of Global Research and Development at Monsanto.